Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernon. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between, without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Hello there, I hope you're all well. Sorry this has taken a little bit longer than usual to put up. I was up late last night and then I was attending the weekly coffee morning that some of us here host in Naas. I don't think I've mentioned it here in the podcast before. Basically, it's a coffee morning for mums and dads or carers in the area that have young kids and kind of want something to do on a Monday morning, and that seems to be a popular morning to help you get up and get started for the week. All are welcome. We provide tea, coffee, and we have loads of new toys coming next week, so there's little PlayStations for the kids. It's a lovely safe space. The doors are closed, no one can get in or out without any of us. There's toilets, it's really clean, so it's just a nice area or a nice thing to have in your calendar. And I'll actually link the Instagram page, because obviously sometimes it doesn't happen very often that we can't host the morning, because between the three of us, sometimes the kids are sick and we just can't make it out. But we're usually there on a Monday morning. I'll pop the link in the show notes, as I said, and everyone's welcome. You're more than welcome to join us. So I'm just back from the coffee morning and I'm getting a chance now to record this introduction. So also thank you to those of you who sent in your submissions this week. There's been loads of them, so it's giving me kind of the nod that I need to go ahead with two episodes a week, so I'm working on that as well. Another thing I want to mention is the change to kind of bring the podcast into two episodes a week. I have brought in basically a way to support the podcast, so to help me make that change, and it's through Acast, so there's a link already in the show notes, and there you can sign up for €5 a month, either just to say thank you, keep going, here's a little bit of cash just to keep the podcast afloat, because there are overheads every month to keep the podcast going, but also to get the episodes ad free, so you can get that there. I'll leave the link, I think the link's already in the show notes. And hopefully in January, I've started contacting people to kind of bring their chats forward, because we were tipping over into 2024 and I want people's memory of their birth experience to be, I don't know, there, basically. I don't want them to have to revisit something that won't be as fresh in their memory. So anyway, this week I'm sharing my chat with Julie, who talked to me. She's currently pregnant and she's due in March, but she spoke to me about her previous pregnancy and the birth of her son. Julie's experience was during the height of COVID. Her parents and her sister were living in Japan at the time, and she was really focused on and needed their support. Obviously, no doubt we need our families. Most of us need our family there throughout these huge changes in our lives. Thankfully, her mum did make it in time and she was there to support her. Her experience is quite difficult to listen to in parts. She was assisted with forceps. She did need to go into surgery to repair a tear that she had, and she had an epidural in there, which is something that she felt kind of really stung because she didn't get the epidural when she was giving birth. She had a really rough physical recovery and needed to go in for a DNC eventually to help remove the products of birth, which is what they call all the clots. She was passing blood for quite a while and she went into... she was admitted twice. She then goes on to talk about both her breastfeeding experience, which was tough for her, and also postnatal depression. She admits that she didn't realise she was struggling until she was diagnosed, and then she felt quite different with that diagnosis, as in for some people it's a relief, but for her she felt, oh gosh, I've been struggling all this time without even knowing it. She found the right support after not initially clicking with a counsellor. She did find the right support and she is in a really good place now. So I did ask her how she feels about giving birth again in March, and she's in a really positive place, which is just so nice to hear. So I'll let you listen to Julie's story. Thank you, Julie, for sharing as much as you did. I think these stories are always so valuable, as is every single birth story. So it's a true honour when someone digs as deep as Julie did and shares so much of her life with us. So I really appreciate it, as I know all of you will. Thanks, Julie. So, Julie, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. Thank you for coming on to and offering to share your story this evening. I think it's going to be a really important conversation for a lot of people to hear, and a lot of people will connect with what you went through during the lockdowns and everything. So do you want to give us a little introduction to you and your family, and then we'll talk about your pregnancy?
Yes, so thank you for having me. I have a two-year-old boy called Zeke, and he was born in October 2020, so kind of right smack in the middle of pandemic. What was the other question?
Let's just chat about conception. So how you felt pregnant, did you plan your pregnancy?
So in the December before I found out I was pregnant, I found out I was pregnant in the February, and then December before, I've been having like quite a few gynae issues for like the last kind of 2 years before that. Under investigation for things, and then was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries in December. So at the time, like they were just like, you know, it's one of those things, like it could be difficult to have kids, so maybe like start thinking about it. So at that stage we were kind of like, okay, we'll think about it, but not really like, yeah, basically we didn't think that it would happen as quick as what it did, because then I got pregnant in the February. So it was kind of like, it wasn't not planned, but it wasn't planned. I think we just, it was a bit of a shock. It was good. Obviously, it was a great shock, but also I think like we just weren't prepared at all. We just weren't really expecting it. We thought that it would have taken ages. Very blessed that it did happen the way it did.
And how did you find out? Did you have a late period, or did you feel it? Yeah, tell me how you found out.
Yeah, so I had... my period had been late by just like a few days, but actually before that I remember talking to my mum and talking about like how I was like, yeah, I've had like this really weird period this month, like it's literally just like lasted like a day or two and then went away. It was like really light bleeding, and my mum was like, that's implantation bleeding, and I was like, no, that's not what it is. I didn't even know that that was a thing. And then I'd been really, really tired, I remember like literally waking up from like this really long nap. Like I'm always tired. Anybody that knows me will tell you that I'm tired all the time. And I always would have just napped whenever I wanted. So I'd been really tired and had a really long nap one afternoon and woke up and was just like, this tiredness is not normal. Like there's something seriously wrong with me. And I think I'd gone on to Google, and I'd been having like kind of like period cramps for a few days, but wasn't getting a period, which I thought was weird as well. And I remember like one of the things that came up was like, oh, you could be pregnant. And I was like, there's no way. Like I didn't even know that that was a symptom of pregnancy. Like that makes no sense. Then the next thing, I remember walking in from Tesco's with the test and just like saying, I walked into my husband who was sitting playing FIFA, and I was like, I'm just away, I have to take a pregnancy test here. And he was like, aye, right, okay, because you know, like how many times, like, I'll maybe take a test just in case. So like both of us like weren't expecting anything of it, like there was no kind of like build up to prepare us, because I remember being absolutely raging because I had half a bottle of wine in the fridge and I was like, why did I not just finish that before taking the test? But it was positive and got the shock of our lives. I went down and told my husband. He was just like, no way, like no way. There's absolutely no way, like you're lying. So I took then another like 3 or 4 tests, I think. Then we went down and got the, I remember like literally my husband was like, well, you're going to have to take another one, like pee again. Pee. And I was like, Ryan, I have no like water left in my system. So I was like, he was like handing me cupfuls of water to like down it. And so I'd taken a few tests, and then we took the one of like the clear blue ones and told me how many weeks it was, and it was like five or six weeks. I think from that moment on we were literally just in disbelief for kind of quite a while. We told my family, we told my parents a few days later. We'd booked an appointment to see the doctor, and then we wanted to wait until that appointment before we told people. So it was like, I think it was like 2 days. I think we found out on the Tuesday and we went on the Friday. I remember, so my parents were living in Japan at the time. Everything was like through FaceTime. So I remember they had been away at like on like some like retreat weekend, and I had suddenly just gotten to the stage where I was just busting to tell them. Like it was just like, we need to tell them like right now. So the second, pretty much the second, it was like, it must've been like 6 o'clock in the morning, their time. I had rang them and my mum was still in bed, like as you would be at 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, yeah. And she was like, Julie, like, she was like, what's going on? I was like, oh no, sorry, you're sleeping, it's fine. Like, go back to sleep. And she was like, what's wrong? Like, what's going on? I was like, no, it's okay. Like, it's not important. Like, well, I'll just tell you, I'll talk to you later. And she knew then straight away. She was like, Julie, do you have something to tell me? And so then we told her, and like I don't think she was, she knew from the implant, she knew from like before I did, from the bleeding that I had had. And I was just totally naive. So they're all very excited. My mum started screaming so much that somebody had like come running into their room, like knocking on the door, because they thought that she was having like a heart attack or something. They were like, is everything okay? Because the walls were like so thin where they were staying. So then told our families kind of I think from like that day onwards, and took a wee while to tell like friends. I think for a while we were just like processing it. Well, I know for me especially, like I was taking quite a while to process it. I didn't feel like, I think I just like, I immediately felt kind of almost like a bit of dread, I suppose, in a way, or just maybe like panic, or I don't know, but excitement at the same time. I didn't really know how I felt about it, but I didn't want to tell people because I didn't want to like have people be all excited and congratulate me and talk about how exciting it was when I wasn't feeling excited myself.
That's it.
That was kind of it. It was a lot of telling people on FaceTime, and because obviously it was the middle of the pandemic at that stage. It was literally like about 2 weeks before. So by the time we were starting to tell people, it was literally like the, because I remember like my best friend having to tell her on FaceTime, because we had plans to meet so many times, and then the fear of COVID had set in, and her husband was a doctor, and it was like very much like, right, we'll maybe put it off, and she was pregnant at the time, so she was like not wanting to see anybody just in case. So yeah, a lot of FaceTime calls, a lot of texts to tell people as well, which was never really what we pictured. But
shots on the floor.
Sorry, is he on his knees?
Yeah.
Trying to hide. Yeah.
Like.
So I don't usually let him interrupt when we're later on in the conversation, because that's quite no. So tell me when you started to feel, or did you, that sense of excitement and kind of maybe the fear of the unknown wasn't there as much, or can you remember when that?
Honestly, I think probably like once we did start telling people, probably around like 14 to 20 weeks, we kind of started telling people. And we, although, yeah, I think I kind of always had that fear, I think the whole way through, but it was also like, we kind of, I don't really know if there was a point where I was like fully excited, if that makes it. I know that sounds terrible, but I think it just, I loved being pregnant, and I loved, like, I was constantly fascinated by like all the things that my body was experiencing, and like so many like things that I didn't know were pregnancy things, and just like the weird, wild, wonderful symptoms that your body goes through, and then starting to feel movement and all, like I love that. And getting a bump and everything, and feeling like, you know, seeing your belly move. And I just remember always being like, women's bodies are flipping incredible. Like,
yeah,
they really are. I think a lot of it, I said at the beginning about my parents being in Japan. So I think a lot of it, I found it really difficult, because so my 12-week scan was literally the day, it was like a week before I was due to get my 12-week scan, the restrictions had changed to say that partners couldn't come into 12-week scans.
Okay.
And so we had gone for a private scan at like 11 weeks that Ryan was able to come to. So that was really lovely that he was able to be there for. So we had that. And then the 12-week scan I had on my own. And then the 20-week scan, I was still on my own. They changed the restrictions again, that partners were allowed to come to 12 and 20 week scans, like 2 weeks after my 20 week scan. So like, I was just missing all of the cutoffs. He couldn't come to any other appointments with me. We found out the gender at the 20 week. And I remember like asking them to write it on a bit of paper, and they wouldn't do it. They were like, no, we can't do that. We'll just have to tell you. So like, I had to find out on my own and then go out to the car and tell him. And so there was just a lot about the pregnancy that I suppose COVID took away a lot of excitement. And then there was a lot as well that I kind of like, I wouldn't let myself get excited about like certain things, like sorting a nursery or going pram shopping, because my parents were still living abroad. So the whole way through, like, I remember my mum being like, oh, well, like, sure, like, the pandemic, it'll be over by October, you know, like, she had planned on getting home over the summer to visit and helping me kind of start to organise things, and then hopefully being home for the birth as well. But with travel and everything, it didn't work out that way. And then my sister, she was also living in Japan, and she had a baby there over the summer, who ended up in the NICU for 7 weeks. So she was needed there way more than she was needed here. It was all like, it was just a very strange time. Looking back on it, it's just so, I think like this pregnancy is so different. Like I compare it so much to things now, and I'm like, it's just so weird to have things a wee bit more normal. Mm-hmm. We were living in my mum's house, and so she had come home then and had stayed with us. And that was just always the plan, that she was going to be like, obviously just living with us in her house for like whenever the baby arrived and everything. So she was in isolation she'd been isolating for a few days. And like, we had done a whole lot of like back and forth, like anytime anybody sent me, like any friends or anything that were sending me like whole way through the pregnancy, like prams or car seats, I wouldn't even look at the links that they would have sent me, because I was just like, no, I just don't want to do it. I don't want to do it until my mom gets home. So we were cutting it fine, because it was literally like 3 weeks before my due date. I didn't have a pram or a car seat. But yeah, we went to, I finally then one day I was like, right, we really need to get a pram sorted. So like, will we just go? And my mum decided then she would come pram shopping with us, but she would stay in the car. She was just so terrified of like being the person to pass anything on, or so she stayed in the car and we did our research sitting at home on the sofa together beforehand, and then kind of like found a few prams that we wanted, watched a whole lot of YouTube videos, and we would have like, we went into the shops and FaceTimed her as we were walking around the shop and get all of it, and then like bringing things up to the window, and so yeah, and got a takeaway coffee on the way home, and it felt like a full like, that was the experience, so it was great. Like, it was,
yeah
it was, we made the most of it.
And so if you didn't say start preparing until much later in terms of like getting the all the material bits, did you start doing preparation, like did you attend antenatal classes? No. Okay, so did you just, you were just, what, yeah, you were waiting for your mom, were you?
Yeah, I think, yeah. Well, I'm like the likes of like antenatal classes and stuff, I think I never really, I was never really interested in going down. I don't know why, but it was never something that I felt like I wanted to do. Like, I know that a lot of people were really gutted about missing out on those during the pandemic, but I think like my sister has three kids, and I think like for her, like I never really saw her going to any classes, and I think just everything that I like learnt, I learnt from her and from watching, and like if there was anything, ever anything I was unsure of, I would text a friend or my sister or my mom.
Support group, yeah.
Yeah. So I wasn't like gutted about missing the antenatal classes or anything. But yeah, we did. We obviously then had to order the pram and the car seat and everything in. And they were like, yeah, like it'll be fine, you know, like hopefully it might not arrive in time, but if you end up going early or anything, we'll be able to get you one. Like, you know, there might be somebody who's already ordered their pram for like May time that's sitting there. So I remember being like, who orders a pram that far in advance? And then, like, they were like, who?
Everyone. Orders a pram that
far in advance? So yeah. So that was kind of, then I obviously did end up, so that's kind of the next part of the story then. Mm-hmm. I ended up with no pram whenever I went into labor or car seat. So
you want to talk us through then, yeah, I suppose the later stages of your pregnancy.
Yes, so the last few weeks were kind of a bit rough. So I'm a photographer, I photograph weddings mostly and families. So I had a few weddings. Like the 2020 was supposed to be my busiest year at that stage. It was set to be my busiest year. And then obviously with the pandemic canceling weddings and everything. And I did a few kind of like micro weddings over the summer, and people's days changed and looked a lot different. And then it was only really actually by the October that things were kind of starting to pick up and become a bit more normal again. Just kind of towards like the last, I think September time, I was kind of struggling quite a bit. Like, pregnancy itself was grand for the most part. I had pelvic girdle pain towards the end, so I was just getting physio, well, over the phone for that at that stage. And then I had a wedding. So October, whenever, that was the other thing, whenever we found out our due date, my due date was actually Ryan's birthday, so it was really lovely. But it was also a oh shit moment, because it was our busiest wedding month at that stage. It was like,
okay.
And I was just like, what on earth do we do? So I think as well, like, I had stress a lot at the beginning about like contacting couples and like just letting them down. Yeah. And then even more so whenever the pandemic hit, and I was like these couples have already lost so much with like having to change their whole vision for their wedding. And now I'm coming in and being like, oh, I'm really sorry, but I'm pregnant. I may or may not be able to do it, you know. But yeah, I sent out emails to all my October couples and just explain the situation. And at that stage, my husband was doing it with me too. So coming up to the end, I had high blood pressure kind of like the last few weeks. But I think I started to stress a lot about COVID at that stage. And I was so swollen. Oh my goodness. Like, if you had seen the size of me, people wouldn't have even recognized me. There just was so much fluid everywhere. I remember like sending photos. I was actually looking earlier on through like old text messages to see like, what do I need to talk about today? Mm-hmm. And like photos of like my feet, and like I would have like taken videos of like me like pressing my finger into my leg and it just making this big dent. Like, I was just so swollen. And so I have one last wedding that I was planning on doing on the I kind of got into like the start of October, and once my blood pressure was up and I was kind of up and down to the midwife about it, I kind of decided at that stage, I was like, right, I had this one on the 9th of October. It was my sister's best friend, so I really wanted to do it. I was determined to do it. And I was like, I kind of decided like the day, maybe the day or two before that, that was going to be the last one. I'd had another two. I had one booked in on the 17th and one booked in, I think, a few days after that. I was like, I'm just gonna send them an email this week and just say like, it's not fair on them as well, like, to have a big fat pregnant woman like hobbling around on the wedding day. So I did my sister's friends, pulled myself together for that, and yeah, so as the day went on, I just started to get quite sore. And I remember by the time the mail came around, I started to kind of, I remember going into the toilet during the mail and just sitting and having a cry. And I can't remember, I just remember being so sore, but not even knowing where I was sore or like what the actual problem was. I was just like, I was just tired and drained. And then I got home that night, and my husband and my mum literally had to lift my legs into the bed. I was just exhausted. And I remember my mum saying, she was like, oh, wouldn't you hate to go into labour tonight on a night like this when you're already so tired? And my husband was like, you're not doing anything tomorrow, and like for the rest of the week, like, you're putting your feet up, you're doing no more, like, everything stops now. I was like, yeah. So got into bed, got about 2 hours of sleep, and then woke up to this big massive pop, and that was my waters. Then started labor. And I remember leaping out of the bed, thinking that I wet myself, because I thought I had just gone into such a deep sleep that my body just didn't care anymore.
Oh god.
And I remember standing up and kind of like rushing myself into the bathroom, and just this like gush just kept on pour, like it wasn't like in the movies where there's like this like wee balloon pops and it's like a wee tiny puddle, like this, I stood in the bathroom and it just like poured and poured and poured like Niagara Falls. I don't know how I had so much fluid in me. And so I started like shouting, because at that stage, apparently I'd been snoring really badly that night. So Ryan had literally got out of the bed like 15 minutes before and had gone downstairs to sleep on the sofa. I was like, of course this is the night that he's not in bed beside me. So I just started yelling for him to come up. He came running up and we woke up my mom. I don't know how she didn't hear me yelling either. I kind of went into like a bit of shock at that stage. I remember being like, I think I was in denial as well. I was like, I don't think it's my waters. Like, I think I've maybe just wet myself. And my mom came in and just took one look at me. And she was like, Julie, like, it's your waters. And Ryan always talks about being, my mom used to be a nurse. And so it's good to have like a medical person in the family. And she interpreted for Japanese people over the years and would have like gone to a lot of hospital appointments and has been there for a lot of births. So she knows a lot. So she literally she walked in, and Ryan always talks about being so disgusted at like how my mom literally, I was just standing in this puddle, and she just came over, and I was like, it's okay, I think I've just wet myself, it's totally fine, like I feel totally fine, like there's no way it's my waters, like. So this was 2 weeks early, sorry. That's why I think it was such a shock as well, because I was kind of like, in my head I was like, right, from tomorrow I can start properly preparing for the baby, like that's whenever it's all happening. And my mum just got down on her hunkers and put her finger through the puddle and like,
knew you were going to say that, yeah.
got brought it up on her fingers and kind of like rubbed it together and was like, yeah, it's your waters. And Ryan was like, why would you do that? So yeah, she's gonna love me for telling that part of the story. So then I went over and sat in the toilet, and I just kept on leaking and leaking and leaking. And at that stage, then I think I just went into shock, and I sat and I literally trembled, like my legs and I couldn't get myself to stop shaking. And it was even like talking, like my teeth were chattering and everything. Like it was just like, I couldn't get words out. I was just like, no, like there's no way that this is happening. And then it was weird because I wasn't feeling anything else. Like I didn't have any contractions, okay. I didn't have any pains at all. And I was like, I don't even know what do you do when your waters break? Like, do you have to ring the hospital, or like, am I supposed to wait here until things start? Or, so we rang them anyway, just cause we weren't sure. And they were like, no, like it. So I think, I'm not sure what it's like, in the South, but here it's like, there's kind of like different rules for different trusts. So basically like the hospital that, so I know of some people who have had their waters gone and haven't had to go up because they're in a different trust and that's just not their guidelines. I don't know. So they had, they were like, no, like, because it's your first baby and it's your waters, like, it's definitely your waters have gone. Like you just come up and just get checked. So, I remember being so pissed off. I just wanted to go back to bed. I was like, yeah, but I feel fine. Like, I'll just put a pad on. I'll go back to bed. Like, I really need sleep. And mum was like, Julie, you're not going to be sleeping tonight. So this was about, like, I think by the time we got up to the hospital, it was maybe about 3 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, my husband dropped me off at the doors and I went in and they checked me and I was 1 to 2 centimeters, I think, at that stage. And I had started feeling kind of like niggly contractions in the car on the way there. We always joked as well about, like, because the road to the hospital from our house, like at our house at that time, is kind of out in the countryside, and they were like the bumpiest, most awful roads. And we always said, we were like, this is going to be awful in labor. But my husband did very well with his driving. He was very good. But yeah, got there. And I was kind of like, I was feeling like kind of tightenings, but it was all in my back. And I remember feeling like a bit kind of period crampy, but there was like, by the time Ryan dropped me off, there was nothing major. Like I remember just walking in like normal and kind of half expecting, I think, to be sent home as well. And then, yeah, they admitted me there. Then I remember sitting in the bed in fetal assessment and the midwife was kind of just like pottering around and there was no like urgency. But to me, I was like, so like, I'm in labor here. Like, what's going on? Like, I remember, like, because then I started, once I was in the bed, I started then within maybe like half an hour of being there, the contractions were coming a bit more frequently. And I remember like feeling the need to tell her every time I had a contraction. So I was like, and I remember just being like, why is she just being so blasé about this? Like, obviously they do it every day. But I was just like, yeah, I think that's another one now. Okay, that was definitely a contraction. Like, okay, yep, that was definitely another one. Like, they're coming faster. And she was just obviously like, yeah, that's normal. Like, you're in for a long night. So at that stage then, they gave me cocodamol and I went into the bath then. Yeah, I went in, left fetal assessment and sat in the bath for, it must have been a few hours. And just kind of started timing them on my phone. And I think it did kind of take the edge off a bit, but I always think, like, looking back on it, it's so weird because at that stage, like, it was really weird for Ryan to not be there because,
yeah,
like, by the time he, like, so he dropped me off at the doors and he wasn't allowed to come back up until I was in active labor. So he, like, he saw me, like, just, like, walking in and being like, yeah, yeah, okay, fine, see you later. And by the time he came back around, like, I was, like, by the time he was able to come in again, I was totally past it. And I had done, like, all night of labor on my own, like, and I think it was just, it's just crap that COVID, like, robbed so many people of that part. Like, I think just your experience and all that stuff for the first time, like, that's why I was so, like, kind of, like, angsty with the midwife. It was kind of like,
but that's what came into my head. I was like, if Ryan was there, he would have been there to comfort you and talk to you about these new feelings that you were having, the contractions that were getting more intense. Yeah,
because I think that was the problem. Like, I think I kind of, by the time he came around, I was just so past it. I had no, like, other than, like, the occasional midwife kind of dropping in to see how I was getting on, like, there was nobody sitting there supporting me and, like, like, talking me through breathing or anything like that. And, like, even, like, the time that I was in the bath, like, I was in there on my own the whole time. Like, obviously the midwives came in and checked every now and then, but it was kind of like, yeah, you're getting on okay. Yeah, you're doing really well. Okay, like, we'll leave you to it. And then back out again. So, yeah, I remember just, like, getting out of the bath eventually once I think things got unbearable. And then I'd gotten onto the bed, and I remember just, like, the bed was just not comfortable. Like, it just wasn't a nice place to be for contractions. And by that stage then I was really struggling, and I think I asked them to check me again, or I maybe asked for more pain relief or if they could check me, and they came and they were like there was just so much, like, looking back on it, there was so much I just didn't know. So they were kind of like, they came in, they checked me, and they were like, yeah, you're 4 centimeters, okay, let's go, like, we'll take you around to delivery suite. I was just kind of like what does that mean? Like, so at that stage then, this was about 8 o'clock in the morning. So Ryan came up then, and he, like, met in the corridor as I was being wheeled round. And yeah, like, he must have seen some clear difference from, like, the state of me at that stage. But yeah, went in. Our midwife was absolutely amazing. So my best friend was actually in her final few months of her midwifery training. I had actually texted her, like, at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning whenever I was on my way to the hospital to say, like, that I was in labor, because, like, all along, like I said, I was more than happy for her to be there. And, like, she had helped me so much during the pregnancy, and just an amazing person to have. So she was actually going to be away from, like, she was away from, like, this was on the Saturday, and she was away from the Wednesday to the Saturday. And she was due back in that morning at, like, half, I think her flight got in at, like, 8:30 or something. And I remember her being like, you keep that baby in until I get there. Like, I'm coming straight from the airport down to the hospital. So, I literally text her to say, I'm in labor. And the next thing I remember, like, lying in the delivery suite laboring and looking up, and she just walked through the door, and I was like, what are you doing here? Like, I think it was around 8 or 9. I'd just been kind of laboring. I was just so exhausted. I think by the time that Ryan had come round, the tiredness had just really set in, and I was having Remy for pain relief. Do you have that
in the side? Remy Fentanyl pump thing, is it? Yeah.
So yeah, just pressing the button as, like, contractions come and go. But I think, like, I don't know what, I just feel like I was just so out of it for so much of it. I remember kind of lying there and just, like, lying with my eyes closed for a lot of the time, and the contractions were kind of coming thick and fast, and I found it really difficult to use. I don't know what it, I think something about my contractions being in my back. So I think I labored for a few hours, a good few hours. Well, it was kind of 9, and then I think in total I was pushing for about an hour. So everything. I did the whole, I think pretty much the whole of it, the whole thing in the bed on my back. There was one stage that I tried to stand, and they were so good at giving me different options and everything. I tried to stand at the side of the bed, but my legs were so weak at that stage that I just nearly collapsed. Like, when the contraction came, my legs were just shaking, and I knew that I wouldn't have been able to withhold it. So I think I stood for like maybe one contraction, and maybe one contraction or one push. I'm not even sure. I think it was a contraction. And then again, I found there was a few contractions where I labored over the back of the bed, you know, with the back mm. of the bed up, kind of leaning over the top of it. And I did really like that, but I can't even remember why I decided to lie down again. I think it was just the tiredness was just like, I just literally couldn't do anything but lie down. So yeah, about 45 minutes or so of pushing, his heart rate started to drop. And they were kind of like, a few times I'd said, they were like we're keeping an eye on his heart rate. It is starting to drop a wee bit. Like, if it keeps going like this, like, we really, really need the baby out. So if it keeps on going like this, like, you'll have to, we'll have to look at some sort of intervention. And I think I just assumed that, like, the only intervention was a C-section. And I kind of, like, in my head, I was kind of like, I've become kind of okay with that. I was kind of just like, just whatever it takes to get the baby out, like, that's fine. And then they were talking about either vacuum or forceps. Because they were like, you're doing really well. Like, he's really far down. Like, you just need to keep pushing. And so I remember at that stage feeling like this kind of like, once they, so they kind of were back and forth, and the sister kept on coming in, and you could hear like whispering every now and then. And they were kind of like talking in amongst themselves, and it was kind of like, right, like, really need to get this baby out fast now. Like, the heart rate was really starting to drop. So then it was kind of a bit of a panic. And I remember them every now and then, they would just come over and they would have like a word with me and be like, we really need to get this baby out. Like, we'll give you like one or two more pushes and then we're going to have to call the doctor. And basically, like, on the last push that I had done, the heart rate went way down and they were like, look, we're going to have to bring the doctor in now. Like, are you okay with that? And that was fine. Like, I looked at Ryan, he was okay with it. And I think as well, it was weird because although it was all like very like fast paced and it was.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Becoming an emergency, I remember feeling like this weird sense of peace, and I don't know if it was because of just like having Lizzie there or having like just kind of like the atmosphere that had been made. It was just, I just kind of had gotten to the stage where I was just like, I just trust these people that are around me, and I just, they know what's best. And so yeah, they came in, and I do, the only thing I remember thinking at one stage was whenever they were, every time I was pushing towards the end and they were telling me that I was doing really, really well, I remember thinking, they're lying, they're all just telling me this because like they, that's what they need, like they need to do for me to keep going. But I remember thinking like, I never, like I've heard of people talking about like in, during labor, like feeling like those surges and like feeling the baby kind of move down. And I never felt that. I feel like I wasn't very in touch with my body at that stage. So I remember just being like, I just feel like I was pushing and pushing and pushing and nothing was happening. And although they were like, oh yeah, you're doing really, really well, I remember I just didn't believe it at all. And I was just thinking, they're just telling me that because they have to. But like really, like something's wrong here. So anyway, the doctor came in and I had the forceps then, and I think I had an episiotomy, and then it was basically like one pull of the forceps and one pull as I was pushing, and the baby was out, and that was it. And it was kind of like that disbelief of like really, is it, like, are you sure? But yeah, it was all quite like, he was fine as soon as he came out, and he was put straight up onto my chest. And I remember looking down at him and saying that he looked just like my sister, which still to this day, like, nobody agrees with me. They're like, I don't know where you see that at all. But yeah, I just remember like just kind of as soon as he was put on my chest, just feeling that kind of like I've done it. I'm exhausted. Like, I just want to be done. And just like, I remember being happy for people to just take him, and they were obviously doing the weight and everything and cleaning him up. And then Ryan then took him for a while because I then had to go to theater. So I'd had a 3A tear. But I remember just being really happy for somebody else to hold him.
Okay.
But I think it was just that I was just so exhausted. I felt like really like, in a way, like really unprepared for it. Even though like I know that I had labored, like it had been like about a 12-hour labor and I think about 6 hours of active labor, so it was actually quite good, it was quite fast. I think that I was just so like not mentally prepared for him being there yet.
You didn't have a breather, like that the breather that you were expecting. Like, I'm sure you went to bed thinking, oh, this is it now, this is my mat leave. Yeah. And then you were just, yeah, no.
Yeah, this, yeah, he had other plans. So went to theater, and whenever I came back then, I think Ryan had still been holding him for a good while. I think in between all this somewhere, I had fed him. I think I maybe gave him a quick feed before theater. But then they were quite like adamant that I had to go to theatre quite quickly because then I was having quite a lot of bleeding.
Okay.
Whenever I came back, so for theatre, I'd had the spinal then, which kind of feels like a bit of a waste once you've done like the whole of labour with like no epidural, no spinal, and then you come out after being stitched up and you're like paralysed from your chest down. Yeah, again, like I at that stage just felt, I was just really, really unwell and really tired, and I just had, like, I was happy for Ryan just to sit there and hold him, and I was happy to just watch him from a distance. And then they had come in, the nurses had come. I was in the delivery suite, like, for a really long time. Like, they brought me back around to that same room. And the good thing was that even though, like, obviously Ryan wasn't able to be there for the first part, because I did have to go to theatre and because things had kind of, like, taken a bit of a turn, he was able to stay. So he ended up getting to be there, like, pretty much all day in the end. Because I wasn't back around to the ward until about 10 o'clock that night. So that was whenever then he was leaving. So it was really good that he got to have that time. And it was just really good to have him there, because I don't know what I would have done if I was back on the ward from, like, straight after and on my own. But yeah, so they came back and they had checked, they had lifted the covers and checked me after the surgery. And they were like, okay, you've had quite a bit of blood loss. And then the next thing, like, the nurses were kind of like, the midwives and the sister were kind of back and forth, and there was a bit of, like, roundabout. And then they came back in, they were like, okay, we need to do a procedure here. She was like, you've had quite a bit of blood loss. And I can't even really remember them, like, explaining it. I think I was still so out of it. I think with how much Remy I had, I was just so kind of just foggy. But I think as well, like, I just look back and I think the exhaustion had, like, such a big part to play in how I just was not functioning. So basically they said that they were like, look, we need to do a procedure here, like, we need to get these clots out. And I was kind of just like, right, I had no idea what to expect at that stage. I kind of was just like, yeah, okay. And they were like, do you want gas and air? And I remember thinking, like, why would I need gas and air? Because at this stage I'd had the spinal as well, so, like, I was still technically a bit numb. But I was kind of like, oh, if they're offering gas and air, I'll take it, like, that stuff's great. So I took the gas and air, and basically one of the midwives had to like lean on top of my stomach with her hands and press down really, really hard, while the other one had to basically manually remove clots from my womb. And it was absolute, like, I can't even explain, like, to this day, it was excruciating. And I remember, like hyperventilating as they were doing it. And I remember thinking that Ryan was, like, just sitting there holding Zeke beside us, and like, just thinking, like, this must be traumatizing for him. But I remember in that moment thinking that I was gonna die, and just being like, I've never ever fainted before, like, ever. I've always wondered, like, what's it like to faint until then. So I remember just literally, like going into, like, this, like, zone, and, like, lying my head back, looking up, closing my eyes and seeing stars, and then just, like, passing out. And and I could hear them. It was really, really weird, because I could hear everybody talking around me, and I could hear them, like kind of, like, everything went kind of, like, echoey, and I could hear them call my name and trying to bring me round, but, like, I just couldn't, like, it was the weirdest experience of just not being able to respond or function. So at that stage then, I remember, like, once I came around, they were like, oh, like, I think you maybe just had a wee bit too much gas and air. And I was like, that wasn't the gas and air. Like, it was, I don't know if it was a mixture of the blood loss or just, like, the literal, like, the pain. I think it was worse, because, like, you go through labor and you finish labor and you think, like, right, that's it. That's the worst part done. Like, I've birthed a baby. The pain's, like, I've had the worst part of the pain, that's it, over. And then for, like, a few hours later to go through that, like, excruciating pain again, it was just horrendous. So yeah, they were like, oh, I think you maybe just had a wee bit too much gas and air. And I was like, no, I definitely have just passed out, because I was in so much pain. So yeah, I still to this day say that part for me was worse than the actual birth itself. Not long after that then, I was put back on the ward. Zeke, he wasn't well. He had actually had a temperature after birth, and I had spiked a temperature after birth, so we were both put on antibiotics. And they didn't really know like what it was or why, but and then he was also quite jaundiced. So that was kind of the start of the pressure to feed and like, you know, really need to get him fed. And but anyway, I went back to the ward the first night. I remember actually, like, I don't know if it was maybe that Zeke had been kind of like a bit drugged up or maybe like a bit traumatized from it all as well, but I remember he actually slept like quite well. Like I was expecting him to wake up way more. And I remember at like 4 o'clock in the morning, being so annoyed. I remember just being so annoyed. Like at that stage, you just want to be left alone, but obviously they have to do their obs and everything all night. And I remember being so pissed off every time somebody would come round and want to take your blood pressure or, I was kept in then a few days after that. He was born on the Saturday afternoon, and then I was kept in until the Monday. So I had all day Sunday. Basically, it was because I still was like spiking temperature up and down. He was spiking temperature up and down, and because he was jaundiced, and also then because I had lost a lot of blood, so I had to stay in to get a blood transfusion as well. Yeah, I really, really pushed to get home then, because at that stage the visiting was once a week. So Ryan was able to be there, like it was great, he was able to be there the whole labor. And then the Sunday he was able to come up for his visit, and then we were hoping then that I would get home on the Monday, and that would be like, obviously he wouldn't need to come up and visit because I'd be going home. So that was how it worked out, which was great. Then we kind of started our journey into life at home, and that was a whole other roller coaster in itself. So I had been home about, so feeding like was way more difficult than what I know everybody always said it was difficult, but I think I put a lot of pressure on myself. I knew that I wanted to breastfeed, but I was kind of just like, I got to the stage where I was like, I really, really want to keep feeding, but I don't know why. Like I didn't know why.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't like totally against formula, but I didn't want to do it, but I didn't really have any reason for not doing it. It was great being at home. With my mum being there, it was absolutely incredible as well, because like she was able to help. And I think like literally the first few days that I was home, Ryan and my mum like literally took it, and I think we all knew that I wasn't well, and Ryan and my mum literally took it in turns to like to bring Zeke up to me for a feed. So like they would be like, right, you go up and try and get some sleep. And then every time he needed fed, they would like bring him in. And it got to the stage then where it was like, I think this was it, maybe not the first few days, but within like the first week, it got to the stage where like they would have both been, any time he needed fed, they would both like look at each other and have the argument of like, right, who's breaking this to her? Like, who's going to break the news? Because whenever they would bring him up for me to feed him, I literally would just sit and cry. And I was just like, and I don't know what it was. I think I wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't enjoying feeding. And I was just so unwell. But yeah, anyway, I finally invited two of my friends around on the 16th, and they came and sat for like an hour or two. And I just remember as they were there, my mum said that I was just going whiter and whiter and whiter, and I was just feeling really unwell. And then I went up to the toilet and passed this massive clot. So rang fetal assessment, and they were like, no, you need to come up. So they admitted me at that stage. And again, I had to have another procedure where I had to have an internal exam, which after stitches is not pleasant at all. And they had said that there was like still there was clots basically in my womb, and that I needed to pass them. So they gave me like a medication to pass them. So Zeke was able to be in hospital with me at that stage. And he, yeah, at that stage, that so that was the first time I was readmitted. And it was weird because, so literally I was kept in overnight basically for them to basically see if these tablets were going to work or not. And they're, it's really, really weird. I don't even know what the medication is, but it's like four tablets you have to take. And they make you so cold and like your whole body just goes into shivers. And it was just horrendous having to sit there and having to try, like I remember trying to feed Zeke, but like literally like not even being able to pick him up because I was shaking so much. And this is just like apparently a normal side effect. That night then, it was just, I remember just being like literally the night from hell because there was a midwife that had come in and basically they just started putting loads of pressure on me about how like jaundiced Zeke was and like his weight had dropped, which all babies do, like in the, especially breastfed babies in those first few days. And I remember like knowing myself that I remember being like, I know that he's okay. Like I know that my baby's okay. I don't feel like there's anything wrong with him. Even though I had been readmitted for me and Zeke was only there because I was feeding him, like if I wasn't feeding him, he would have been at home. This midwife came in and just like obsessed over Zeke and over me feeding him. And like, they brought out like the, you know, like the sheets where you have to like record like how much you fed and how long you fed for and what side and how many wet nappies, how many dirty nappies. And basically like had me up all night. Like she then started really pushing formula at one stage. And it was like, it was like every time I had stopped feeding him, she would come in again and be like, okay, we'll try feeding him again. I was like, I literally stopped like half an hour ago. Like there's nothing left. And then she started really pushing formula. And I remember just sitting crying and somebody else coming in. And I was like, I just feel so under pressure. Like I had, the midwife for some reason I had been feeding him for so long. And then they brought in like the two of the electric like breast pump machines and then had me pumping on both sides. Like I was literally being milked like a cow. I was like pumping for ages. And I remember then just being so exhausted and somebody came in to check on me and I just sat and I sobbed and I was just, and I, at that stage as well, I think that was like the baby blues had hit. It was that like my milk had definitely just come in because she had said to me, she was like, what's going on? I was like, I just feel like so much pressure to give him formula. I don't want to give him formula, but I don't know why I don't want to give him formula. And like, I feel like he's okay. And I'm here for me, not for him. But everybody's just become obsessed about his feeding. And she was like, okay, let's see, like, what have you been expressing there? Like, you've been pumping, like, what have you got? And she lifted this bottle and I had expressed, this is on day six. I had expressed, this is after already feeding him all night, I'd expressed 80 mils, which I think is like, what, 2 ounces?
Mm.
It was like a full, like big, massive. And like, she was like, is this what's just come out of you? And I was like, yeah, like sobbing through my tears. She was like, that's amazing. Like, that's a lot of milk. Like, you know, that's something to be really, really proud of. And I was like, but it's not enough. And she was like, that is enough. Like, it's okay. Like, that'll tie him over. Like, yeah. And I just don't know. Like, that was just, that stay was absolutely horrendous. Again, I got out the next, I think I was only in like overnight. I got out the next day. And I just, it was the same thing again. I was like, I'm not going to thrive in here. I need to get home. Like, I can't. Because then they were going to keep me in because of the feeding. And I was like, that's not even why I was admitted in the first place. And I was like, look, I need to just be at home and learn how to get the grips with breastfeeding myself. And I remember getting home that night and like chatting with like my mum and my husband about it. And my mum was like, look, like, what is it about formula? Like, do you want to try a bottle of formula? And I was like, well, yeah, I suppose. Like, I don't know why I don't want to. And we gave him then a bottle of formula that night, and oh my goodness, the relief that it, like, it was just like this like huge weight lifted off my shoulders. I was like, I don't know why didn't want that. I was like, we can't tell that midwife that I've given him formula, because she put so much pressure on me. And I was like, nope, I'm not doing it. So yeah, basically then from then he only really had like a bottle. He had a bottle of formula pretty much every night then. And it was kind of just something to give me a break and to tie him over for a few hours in the evening. And I still breastfed alongside it, and it was just, it worked really, really well. Everything from then was okay. Well, I was a week after that, not even a week, on the 21st then, which actually would have been his due date, and was Ryan's birthday. We were kind of like, right, let's finally, like, we'll get out, we'll do something today. So we ventured out and went for a walk somewhere. And during the walk, I remember walking along and just feeling like this, like, gush. And I said to Ryan, I was like, I think we were in the middle of this like forest somewhere with like no public toilets or anything. Well, actually probably did have public toilets, but everything was closed because of COVID. And I said to Ryan, I was like, I think I just passed a blood clot. And he was, and I again just went white, just felt really, really like sick again. And so we drove to like the closest shop. I went into the toilet and I could literally feel it, like, it's awful, but I could literally feel it sitting the whole way. And I went into the toilet and literally there was a blood clot like the size of my fist. It was absolutely massive. So again, I had to be readmitted again. I had to have that awful cervical examination again. They had to try and manually remove it again, and which, yeah, when you have stitches, it's just not pleasant. I remember actually them saying to me, they were like, look, if we can't do this, like, if we can't get it out ourselves, like, you'll have to go for surgery. I was like, that's fine, put me, like, will I be out for the surgery? And they were like, yeah, like, it was basically a DNC. And I was like, then do it, because I'm not going through this again. So they gave me the tablets, and the tablets didn't pass at that time, so they ended up then having to do a DNC. And yeah, that was my last hospital stay, which was great. But yeah, it was quite a whirlwind of the first 2 weeks. Very hard to like settle in the newborn life being in a hospital. But good to get home.
And how did you feel? So obviously I'd say you were still on tenterhooks for a couple of weeks, wondering, I suppose the surgery kind of did it give you a sense of relief that, okay, well, they would have got whatever, if there was anything left over, they would have just got it there and then?
Yeah. I was looking through messages earlier to see, like, just kind of like put a timeline together, because you forget that. And because I had been on antibiotics, I think they had me on antibiotics as like a precaution from like birth. I was basically on antibiotics for like the first 3 weeks.
Okay.
And yeah, it was kind of, so I think they kind of assumed that it was some sort of infection, but they had, I'd text my friends, and it was literally like, I think a few days after the surgery, the bleeding had like had really, really decreased, and I just felt so much more human. And I was on iron tablets and everything as well, because my hemoglobin had been really low after. But yeah, I remember even like saying, because at that stage the midwife came out for the first visit, and then for like, you were expected to have the midwife out to your house for the first visit, and then for any more you had to go in to the, like, to see the midwife in the hospital, or in the GP surgery. And I remember like that day walking in, I think this was before I was readmitted, I remember walking in to see the midwife, and like, just, she even said herself, she's like, you're so not well, like, you shouldn't be here, like, I'm coming out to you the next time. And I ended up being then under the midwife's care for like a good few weeks after, just because of like the readmissions and everything, they were kind of keeping an eye. But I remember like even then doing the whenever they went in to do like the wee heel prick test, like falling asleep on the seat whenever I was in for the appointment, and just, I literally couldn't walk, and I was so like, with my hemoglobin being so low, I was so breathless, and just like, you just feel so unhuman for so long. So yeah, that was just kind of, it kind of took a good few weeks to kind of feel any sort of normality, I suppose. So yeah, after that, my mom had actually, so she was there in total with us for 8 weeks, which was absolutely incredible. But then whenever she left, when he was 8 weeks old, it was like, what the heck do we do now? Because she was such a great help. I think I always knew that my mood wasn't great. But I think I just, like, I think we all kind of kept on putting it down to, like, I just hadn't been well, and it had been like, it was quite a, the birth was quite a lot, and it was kind of, yeah, there was a whole lot of factors. And then I had a wedding booked in for whenever Zeke was 4 weeks old. And I remember telling the community midwife about this. Whenever she had come around, she was kind of like asking about work and stuff. And I was like, yeah, like, I have a wedding here. He's going to be 4 weeks old. Like, and she was just like, wait, what? Like, you're doing what? And I was like, yeah, like, I'll see how I am. But she's like, but Julia, you've been really unwell. And like, but then it didn't even become like about me being unwell. It was kind of like, what are you going to do about breastfeeding? And I was like, well, I have it all planned out. Like, I was going to bring a cooler, and I was going to bring a pump, and Ryan was going to drive, and I was going to pump on the way from the ceremony to the reception and take pumping breaks. And she's like, you know, like, even like leaving your child, like whenever he's just 4 weeks old, like, he really needs you. And like, that's a long day to be away. And I remember just like, she made me feel absolutely horrendous about it. And I had been looking forward to kind of almost having, I was like, I'm not going to do it if I don't feel well. Like, I know that I haven't been well, but like, by the time I got to 4 weeks, I did feel well enough to do it. Yeah, I remember like at that stage just feeling absolutely horrendous, because she was just like, you're just like, you can't do that. Like, it was just kind of, it was just this huge amount of guilt of like, and then I remember her then passing that on to the health visitor, and the health visitor like bringing it up with me and being like, so like, you're doing a wedding, and like, I hear, like, you know, like, are you sure that that's a good idea? And like, you know, your baby really needs you at that time. And I just remember feeling absolutely horrendous and thinking like, these people think I'm a horrible person. Like, it was just, yeah. There was a few kind of factors like over the first few months that I was really, really emotional. Like, I know that I think for a long time, like, I would have cried every time I had to feed Zeke. And anytime he was crying or upset, like, I remember there was times where I would literally just go into like this like haze of like, I would just zone out, and I just couldn't parent. But it wasn't until about 4 months on, there was actually an incident where he ended up in hospital with carbon monoxide poisoning. So basically the house that we were living in, the boiler broke. So it was like February, it was absolutely freezing cold. And I was like, right, I remember like wrapping him up and everything that I possibly could. I mean, like, I need to get heat into this child. So there was a fireplace in the front room, but I didn't realize it hadn't been lit in like years. So I sat in the front room with him all day, just kind of like kept us cozy by the fire, kept wrapping us up. And as the day went on, my brother-in-law had come down to like have a look at the boiler to see if there was something he could do. And I remember like putting Zeke out on the sofa to change his nappy, and there was like black soot all up around his nostrils. And I was like, that's not normal. And then like wiped my own nose, and there was black soot up my nose. And so whenever my brother-in-law had come in to the room that we were in, the smoke alarm had gone off whenever he opened the door. So I like literally had him in this room of like that was filling with smoke, obviously, without me realizing, pretty much all day. And yeah, I remember then I rang my mum, was like, what should I do? Like, is this okay? Like, he seems fine. Like there's nothing out of the ordinary with him. He had had his injections that day, so it was hard to know, like, if he was out of sorts as well because of that. And I rang Dalriada and they were like, no, like, you need to take him up to A&E because of his age. And we were taken, whenever we got up, we were taken straight through to recess. And I was like, what is going on? Like, because he wasn't like unwell at all. Mm. Like, he was really fine. But they said, so because he was like warm and his cheeks were rosy, but his hands and feet were freezing, that it was like a real concern. And the next thing, they had us in the recess room with, like, there was like 10 people around. Like, we were literally ushered straight in from triage through to recess. There was like 10 people around us. There was people, like, doctors coming and going. They were putting an oxygen mask on him. They were putting like one of those like insulated blankets over him. And it was just like it was just this total, yeah, it was totally surreal. But in between all of this, this doctor kept on coming up to me and being like, so what, talk me through what happened again. And like, she kept on asking me the same questions over and over again. And I remember being like, she thinks that I've done something. Like, this is like a social services thing. Like, they're going to take my baby off me. Like, they think that I've done this on purpose. And it was like, they were just trying like to get the story straight, but they kept asking me the same thing over and over, as if they were like trying to like catch me out on like a lie. And yeah, it was just awful. He was admitted that night, and he was basically just kept on oxygen all night. And they said that there was like slight carbon monoxide levels in his system, so it just had to be like flushed out. And yeah, I think that was probably the kind of, from between that and like just so many different kind of factors at the time, I knew then that like my mood was so like, that was, it was kind of like, you're a failure. Like, you're literally, you put your child in this like place of harm. And yeah, I think then after that was kind of like when I realized that I wasn't really quite right. I think Ryan and my mum at the beginning, like, they had talked to me a few times about maybe like talking to somebody, or like, do you think maybe you're a wee bit like, you're abnormally low, or and I always like shook off. I was never honest with anybody looking back on it. But I think that like that situation with Zeke was maybe like the final kind of triggering point of like, no, like, there's something wrong here. So I went to the doctors, and they had put it down as postnatal depression. And I was put on sertraline and referred to counseling at the time. And yeah, it was like a huge, and I remember like my friend texting my friend who was a midwife and telling her, and she was like, do you feel better like now that you've gone and yeah, you've done that? And I was like, no, I feel awful. Like, I feel like I failed, like, that get having a name put on it of like, it was just like this kind of like, you haven't managed all this time. Like, you've thought you've been coping, but you haven't been. And it was kind of like admitting defeat in a way. So yeah, the counseling referral came through quite quickly, but it was CBT and it was over the phone. And it was just really like, so unnatural. Like,
yeah, it's hard to have those conversations over the phone. You need to see someone's face for those conversations.
Yeah, yeah. And the first one was like a 20 minute phone call, and I remember the girl literally just like asking me these questions. And I had a counselor that I had planned. I was like, oh, I'll probably just go to him. I'd been to him before, and then once this came through so fast, I was like, oh, do you know what else? I've never done CBT before. I'll do that. But I'm actually trained. I did my degree in counselling.
Okay.
I'm all for counselling. I'm its biggest advocate. I've used counselling myself. But like, it just did not work for me. Like, it was just like, and that's why I say to people, like, any of my friends that ever talk about going to counseling, I'm always like, please, please, please give it another chance. Like, if you go to a counselor and like you don't enjoy it, or like give it a few sessions, and if after a few sessions it doesn't work, like, try a different type of therapy, because like, it's not a one size fits all thing. And I knew that myself, but I remember like her literally like having like I had all this stuff. Like, I wanted to sit and talk about how, like, when my baby was crying at night, I wanted to shake him and didn't want to respond to him, or was a zombie and couldn't get out of bed. And instead of that, she would like start the session and be like, okay, so let's talk about your childhood. And I was like, I don't have time for this. Like, my childhood's not the problem. Like, it was kind of like, let's go back to the beginning. And what was your life like at school? And I just remember being like literally sitting on the other end of the phone, like rolling my eyes and being like, why is she asking me these things? And like, that's not to say that it doesn't work for other people, but it didn't work for me at that time in that scenario. And like, I remember literally, like, she was just like, it was, I almost felt like she was sitting with a piece of paper and a checklist.
Yeah.
At the end of the phone call, she was like, okay, yeah, like, I'll ring you again next week, same time. She's like, so yeah, like, it was kind of like, so just before we go, like, any suicidal thoughts? And like, just like said it like so casually, like, that, like, at the end of like a phone call, like, okay, yeah, no problem. Right. Bye. See you later. Just like, it was just the most bizarre. So after that, I was just like, no, I'm just gonna. So I went to the counselor that I'd been to before, and yeah, like, I just felt it really, really helped. The medication helped. I wasn't on it a super long time, and I think like as they got older, things just got easier, and I just felt, I'm not a newborn person. I'm like, I dread that stage again, because I know that I didn't do the newborn phase well. Yeah, it's hard going.
But you went through so much even before he arrived into your world.
Yeah. It was quite a year.
And how do you feel about giving birth again in March?
Weirdly positive. So, and like, that was something I always said from the beginning. Like, I remember, I think as well, like, those first few days after, like, after birth, feeling like almost like I failed, like, I had to get an intervention. Like, and I know that that's not the case at all, but it was kind of like, just those thoughts of like, you couldn't push a baby out yourself, you had to get help. And I remember, like, from the beginning, even though I know the whole experience was awful, I remember thinking like, no, I'd still do it again, because I'd like to try and do it better next time. Like, there was so much that I would do differently. And like, I know, like, this time I have my last wedding on the 31st of December, and I'm doing nothing for January and February. Like, I'm just I'm going to rest. I'm going to enjoy the last few weeks with Zeke while it's just him. And yeah, just properly prepare. I've been like looking at hypnobirthing and so many, like, at all my appointments, like, literally every appointment that I've been to, and every like midwife and doctor or nurse I've seen, they've just assumed that I'd want a C-section. And I was just like each time I'm like, no, like, I want to do it naturally again. They're like, oh, right, okay, like, good for you. But I think it's because of the tear, and because I'd gone to physio afterwards. I'd gone to physio for about almost a year, actually. But again, like, I was just like, no, like, I feel like it could go better the next time. And yeah, I have had, I haven't been totally naive. Like, all along I've been like, yeah, at the minute I feel fine about it, but I know that I might not always feel fine about it, and kind of towards the end. And I have had like the occasional kind of like nightmare where I just like I know all the things that I don't want. Mm. I've had like kind of a phase over the last few weeks where I've started to really stress about the postpartum hemorrhaging that I had, and I'm like, what if I just bleed out this time? So this time I'm consultant led. And at the first consultant-led appointment I had, he was like, okay, well, it'll probably happen again. So we'll just, whenever you go into labor, we'll have like transfusion bags for you on standby. I was like, I know that you're saying that to try and make me feel better, but that just terrifies me, because like the fact that you think that I'm going to need it. So I think like, yeah, I feel, most of the time I feel okay. I feel positive. I really want to try the hypnobirthing. I was actually halfway through my hypnobirthing book whenever I went into labor. And I remember the night that I went into labor, I remember turning around to Ryan and being like, here, would you pack that book in my bag? And he was like, Julie, when do you think you're going to have time to read?
It's,
I was like,
just read a book, yeah.
I was like, I want to try and like get all the last minute tips in. So yeah, I'm going to do a few hypnobirthing classes and stuff this time. Yeah, just hoping to kind of, yeah, I feel positive about it. I just have cool. a few worries and concerns, but I think that like those will probably just always be there, but I think I'm gonna try my best to kind of stay positive about the whole thing.
Thank you so much for sharing. I think this is going to be a really important conversation for everybody to hear, even if it's not something they've experienced themselves, but to help support others. And I think a really important thing that you've pointed out is, if you don't find what you're looking for in with a GP or with a counsellor, keep going to find that person that can help you, because that's really important. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your support. I really appreciate it. There's been a lot of it this week. And I know I've slowed down on the Instagram front. It's just finding the balance. And to me, putting out the episodes is more important than keep it up with Instagram. So that's what I'm doing.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.